Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Monash. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today's no exception. We've got a great guest, but first, a quick thank you to our sponsor. The Real Estate Espresso Podcast is brought to you by International Coffee Farms. International Coffee Farms grows and sells specialty coffee in Boquete, Panama. They now have 11 fully operational coffee farms, and they are 100% sold out. They are accepting reservations for farm number 12. The idea of owning a safe, diversified offshore investment is intriguing to you. Check out International Coffee Farms at internationalcoffeefarms.com. That's internationalcoffeefarms.com. We are back here on the weekend edition. We interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. We've got an awesome case study and an awesome guest all the way from Ottawa, Canada. Welcome to the show, Matthew Maxim.
Hi, Victor. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to connect with you again. And Matthew, you've been doing some very interesting work. Now, today, we're not going to necessarily focus on the success stories, which are easy and fun to talk about. We're going to talk about a case study that is a real-life case study, one that is really a bit more of a failure. And in my experience, you learn more from failures than you do from success. So thank you for agreeing to do this.
Not a problem at all. It's an experience that should be shared with other people. And if they can learn anything from it, it'd be great.
When we think about buying a multifamily apartment complex, the fairy tale goes something like this. You buy it below market value, you make some improvements, you increase the rents, you get great tenants, and then you manage to somehow refinance the property, and you know everyone lives happily ever after. And this was not your particular experience. So why don't we start with, just give us a little bit of the backstory, where you got started in multifamily investing.
Sure, Victor. I got started about 7 years ago. Approximately, working in the private sector, I don't happen to have a pension. So to figure out a way that I'll be okay in future, I started real estate investing, got educated in it, learned some things, and then pulled the trigger on buying a triplex on the outskirts of Ottawa. From there, did a little bit of renovating to it, refinanced out the money, and bought another property on the outskirts of Gatineau, which is just outside of Ottawa as well. And then same procedure, renovate, refinance, and moved on to another one after that. And that's basically how I got started into multifamily real estate investing.
Now, you were investing initially in C-class properties, if I remember correctly.
Yes. Yes, all C-class. I was looking at it from a standpoint of my financial ability to purchase, as well as the cash flow. Again, I was thinking long-term, in the future when I have a pension, what will I need? I'll need cash flow.
It didn't turn out quite to be the fairy tale that we just described, did it?
Not on the next transaction. It didn't go so smooth, no. Again, it was on an outskirts area, looking at several buildings. It started off as 5 and ended up whittling it down to 3 after doing due diligence. But it all turned sour at one point.
Did that have to do with the asset? Did that have to do with the partners you were working with or even the marketplace? There's all three of those things that can come into play when you're dealing with a particular project. You could have things go wrong in one of those areas or all of them.
It was a combination of the three, in a way, I guess you could say. Again, because they were C-class properties, the seller I was dealing with was a C-class landlord, or if you want to say perhaps a slumlord. I had an investor partner that was working with me who was very, very, very busy. So timelines were tricky to make signatures happen, to negotiate, to stay within contract constraints. That was a lot of work as well. And then the demographic of the tenants and the type of buildings we're working with were a little bit tricky as well.
So exactly what happened? What did go wrong in this project?
Well, it started off, we had negotiated a purchase price. Everything was fine like that. However, then we did need to do some more due diligence. We needed paperwork. We needed a bunch of different things. The seller continued to drag his feet, which made it tricky to get anything done via the banking, via insurance, via all the other things you need to get an approval and to close the deal. We were asking for expenses. We wouldn't get expenses. It would take long delays before we get the expenses. And then we did get the expenses. They were either incomplete or incorrect. Rent rolls. We were getting rent rolls in. And then I noticed on some of the rent rolls that the tenants that were on there were actually tenants that were already in one of my other properties that I already own. So I knew the rent roll wasn't incorrect. There were several things of that nature that kept trying to repeat itself. The deal was a good deal, however. So I was patient. My investor was patient. We wanted to get it right and make it happen. So it dragged on for close to 7 months before we decided to drop it. And once we did drop it, 2 days later, we received in the mail from a lawyer that we were being sued.
And what was the basis for the lawsuit? Is it because you backed out of the deal and they felt that you were compelled to close?
It was sort of along those terms. The way it was put is that the seller felt that we did not act in good faith, that we had given him hope that we were going to purchase the properties. And when we backed out, he decided that we should have been able to continue and go through with the sale. And he wanted to force us through with the sale.
Fascinating. What was the end result of the lawsuit?
Well, after 3 years, a lot of lawyer bills, a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of stress, a lot of back and forth between myself, my investor, and lawyers, and then finally a court date, we settled. We settled on the last day of court for approximately $150,000 less than what we were actually going to pay for the properties to begin with.
So when you net out the actual purchase price of the property minus the discount, minus legal bills and the hassle, was it a good deal in the end?
It actually is an even better deal now because it was a good deal when we were ready to pay the full price. So being $150,000 less at the end, it still became a very good deal now. We should actually be able to refinance out within the first year with just one of the properties, and it's several properties that we bought. We can refinance one property and get our down payment back.
That's amazing. That's one of the things that I love about real estate is the resilience of real estate, the ability to find creative solutions. Oftentimes, the money's not made in the sale of the property. We talk about money being made in the purchase. And this really comes down to being a protracted negotiation, a negotiation that ultimately took 3 years.
It did. It really did. They say real estate is of the long game, have patience. This time, patience prevailed. but it was a long 3 years regardless.
Talk a little bit about the uncertainty and the stress resulting from the lawsuit. What was that like?
In a lawsuit, you never know which way you can go. You can leave it to the judge, and the judge decides who they believe is telling the truth the most. You never want to be in that situation where you're not in the control of how it's going to end. That's why, in the end, the both of us came to an agreement to decide to settle at a certain price, because the seller could see that he could have lost, which means he'd walk away with nothing and he'd have enough money to pay the lawyer bills, and he was already in financial trouble. On our side, knew that at that price, we were getting a pretty good deal. And if we lost, we'd have to pay substantially more, as there was damages on top of the lawsuit, along with lawyer fees. So the stress of that, without being able to control that, is pretty intense. Most business people and anybody, entrepreneurs, you're always trying to control what your business is doing. At that point, you don't have control, so you look for the best option. And that's why we did decide to settle for that. During the 3 years, the uncertainty is you don't know exactly what the next step is. How long is it going to take? Will we end up with the properties in the end? Do we still want the properties? Are they being maintained correctly as we're going through this? Because if the seller decides he's going to lose or throw it, why would he maintain the properties? And if we get the properties, we didn't know what we were getting at the end. So there's all those kinds of uncertainties, as well as just the financial part of it. You know, you're putting out thousands of dollars to lawyers just on letters and paper and meetings of talking about stuff without actually going anywhere at any time until the final point does come. It got pushed 1 year longer, which meant another $10,000. It just seemed like it was never going to end.
There's a lot of wisdom in what you just said here. Talk a little bit about the requirement to maintain cash reserves for that entire period in order to deal with the uncertainty. What was that like?
I was fortunate enough that the investor that I was working with had fairly decent cash reserves. But as for myself, in the meantime of that happening, I'd actually been in a motorcycle accident and was injured and fell onto being on disability, or limited disabled, as they've classified me now. So as for cash reserves, unlike my investor, I didn't have that many. Chewed up through them pretty quickly, having to change my lifestyle from the salary that I used to make while I was working to being considered disabled and making a third of my salary. My living costs alone were much higher, so were my debts in accordance with the salary I previously made. So cash reserves are super important to have if you're going to try and do this kind of thing, because you don't know what's going to happen. For 3 years, I struggled through financial things. I've sold vehicles. I've sold things I've accumulated over time just to pay the lawyer bills. But in the end, it's all going to work out because these properties are a good deal. And once we refi, I can start climbing up the ladder again.
Are there any other words of wisdom that you'd like to leave our listeners with, just based on having walked through this fairly difficult path?
Deals can be created, but deals are, like you just said, Victor, when you buy. Don't think about when you're going to sell, because you don't know what's going to happen by the time you actually do want to sell. When you are looking for stuff, be sure you do your due diligence. Be patient. Take your time. If you don't get it, there'll be another one. Don't rush. And if you do see anything kind of strange, or a seller's not being cooperative, or a buyer's being sort of somewhat shady, just walk away. It's not worth the headache in the end.
Great words of wisdom. Thank you, Matthew, for sharing this story. I know it's not easy to talk about because it's not one of those success stories that you're necessarily proud of, but it's one of those things that, having walked through a difficult path, that's where all the learning is. So thank you for sharing that.
Anytime, Victor. I appreciate you having me on.
In the meantime, for the listeners at home, as you're thinking about that, pay close attention to the information you're getting in your due diligence when you do look at a purchase. Have an awesome rest of your day. Go make some great things happen. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.